Daddy, we're doing?
I'm doing a podcast, Dizzy. Hello and welcome to the Too Cool for School podcast. I'm your host, Yannick, and on today's episode, I've got an amazing guest and we're having an amazing discussion around STEM, its impact on our community and its accessibility within our community. So I'll allow my amazing guest to introduce herself.
Thank you so much, Yannick. Thanks for having me on the Too Cool for School podcast. So my name's Amber Shand. I'm a software engineer, speaker, and the founder of She Bikes Back, which is a women in tech community celebrating ambitious women in tech to enter their bravest era yet.
Great stuff. So Amber, when I think about, you know, tech, you know, often it's the same sort of notable, you know, moguls and leaders that sort of come to mind. And I'm sort of curious to know, like, who were, like, your inspirations and role models when it came to tech and who inspired you to sort of come into that field?
Okay, I'm going to give a bit of context here.
Yeah.
So I don't come from a tech or STEM background. I actually studied economics and accounting at university.
Yeah.
So it wasn't until, because when I thought of tech, I'm thinking of nerds. Like, I thought it was a nerd dominated industry. So I'm thinking of, like, not even Elon Musk at the time, but I was thinking of the founder of Facebook, like all these like nerdy white guys in Silicon Valley. And I just thought that's not me. Or when I thought of a coder, I thought of these guys just in a room with their hoodies up, just like typing away.
It's crazy dark doing stuff for the government and stuff.
Just like dark things. I didn't understand what they could be building all this time. You know what I mean? So like, even I went on a website, I wouldn't have thought that code is the thing that built this website, for example. Do you see what I mean? So to me, it was all just magic versus understanding what went on behind it. So I'm doing my economics and accounting degree. And when I'm traveling in Spain, I take a gap year in between my year, right? And not a gap year. I'm kind of just like working things out, you know, like I'm learning how to code. I met this digital nomad and he was like, oh, I'm learning how to code. You know, you can be a digital nomad and earn all this money. And I said, that sounds like a bit of me, because the way that I was going, it was almost like I was going to finance and I was really bogged down in terms of I felt like it was going to be this 9-to-5 job. And I had a mentor who told me that on top of the 9-to-5 job, you'd have to do financial exams. Mm. And in those financial exams, if you didn't pass, then you'd be fired.
Well.
And I felt like I actually don't need to live a life this hard.
Pressure.
It's just too much pressure. And I wanted some kind of job security. There was loads of news around saying AI is going to take your job and like all these things. So I thought like, let me be on the side of technology versus being a victim of it.
Mm.
And so I didn't actually have any role models to look to. So I'm thinking, oh, I need to learn how to code, but there's no one that looks like me in sight for me to make this journey right now. And so when I'm traveling, I meet my friend and I'm going to America, visit him at university, and I'm meeting all these computer science grads. And they're saying, yeah, like, I've got this job at Google, at Facebook, at all these things, and we're going to be on 6 figures. It's crazy. How much? 6 figures and you just graduated.
It's like entry level.
Entry level, right? And I saw the way that they were like on a laptop trying to nerding out. And I was thinking, oh my God, guys, like, is anything that serious? You know, because I just could not relate. But as soon as I heard you can really make some money, it's a high in demand skill, I said, that's where I need to be. And so I don't know what I typed in on Google, but I must have typed in like free coding courses, because I'm not one of those people that like to do things online. I really need to be in person when I'm learning, right? And so I found Code First Girls. And that was where I kind of saw some role models. Like I'm sort of seeing some people that semi looks like me, like in the tech industry. But it wasn't until I found Coding Black Females, a community for black women in tech, that I'm like, oh my goodness, like there's black women in this industry. And there's loads of them that were not only in tech, but they were senior leaders within tech.
Established.
Yeah, established. And that was so good for me to see, because that wasn't necessarily what I'd thought going into the industry, that there would be anyone that looked like me.
Mm. No, that's interesting. And when, like, in your journey early on, did you get a sense of like tech or STEM being like something of privilege, that you need to have like a privileged background to sort of go down that avenue, or is it something that's, you know, accessible for everyone?
Really good question, because when I was getting in, it was almost like there were three ways that you could get in.
Okay.
Runway, the typical way, doing a computer science degree. I wasn't going to spend another, 27K to do that. Second way was doing a boot camp. That cost 9K. And so I was like, I didn't just graduate from university to now spend another 9K doing a boot camp for, I think, 8 to 16 weeks. That doesn't necessarily guarantee me a role in the end. Mm. And then the third way is to self-teach. So teaching yourself how to code, which was essentially the way that I had to go into it. So I would say that there's definitely a privilege, because when I was younger, no one was necessarily saying that, oh, okay, let's be real here. When I was younger, I don't think that I was that talented in school. So I was talented in maths, economics, but not necessarily when it came to like building technology, learning how to code and things like that. I think if I would actually say that education is a privilege anyway. And I was very fortunate to have some teachers that were very engaging, so that when I was learning maths, for example, they were making it fun, they're making it engaging. But sometimes you go to a school where teachers are tired, they're not that engaged. Yeah. And it's like, or if you have a disruptive class, you're a disruptive person, or like things can happen where you're just not engaged in a particular subject. And that's why I feel like there's a bit too much pressure on what you study for a degree to be what you actually do in your career.
Mm.
And I felt like the boot camps, 9K, that if that's not privilege, I don't know what is. You have 9K to drop, right, just on the course, but then for the next 2 to 3 months, you're not working.
Because it's full-time?
Because it's a full-time boot camp.
Wow.
And unless you have an evening job, but nine times out of 10, you still need to be coding outside of the boot camp and on the weekends. That is just privilege in itself, right? But so I feel like learning how to code from scratch by yourself is definitely the hardest route, but there's always an element of privilege when it comes to gaining education to become someone in STEM, basically.
Yeah. Wow, that's so interesting. And I know, so earlier you were speaking a bit about the importance of that representation, but also acknowledging that when you first came in, it was quite difficult to see yourself, you know, amongst, you know, the leaders in STEM, unless you were going to like specific organizations, yeah, exactly, like Coding for Black Girls. Would you say that in your career that you felt that you've had to work, you know, twice as hard to either be acknowledged, you know, respected or taken seriously in your craft? Because I know, especially within tech, that there aren't that many black females when you look at the sort of wider, you know, percentage of it. So do you feel that you've had to do that over your career? Or do you think that, or do you feel that you've been on a level playing field with everyone else?
It's hard to say for sure whether on a level playing field. I would personally say it feels like I'd have to work twice as hard to get half the amount of even praise for what I do. It can so easily be diminished, and people can subconsciously or unconsciously hold you to higher standards, which can be very frustrating. So when you're going towards like a promotion, or you're going towards key projects, or you're working on a new technical skill, it's like sometimes the feedback can be so harsh to the point where they're putting you on a pedestal, and so it's hard to fulfill their need, if that makes sense. And to reach that benchmark of, oh, I can say for sure that Amber knows this, or like Amber has met this target and things like that. Because when it comes to technical things, it's harder to measure sometimes. So you may work on a very, very good project where it's high visibility, there's key outcomes, but you're not always working on projects like that. And sometimes there's a gap where, especially if you're working with someone else, who really gets the credit here? So especially earlier on in my career when I'm working with loads of seniors, it almost felt like I couldn't take the credit because I'm relying on them so much to like get my technical ability up, my confidence up, my knowledge up, my like context up of not only knowing the company, but knowing the best engineering practices, knowing how to advocate and communicate what I'm doing, and asking key questions to get me over that hurdle. So I would definitely say that we do set, I think that people unconsciously set us higher standards, and they just, so even like when people comment on my stuff, I feel like they don't let me get away with like tiny little mistakes the way they would let other people get away with, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does. That's interesting. And how do you, So for example, that example that you just gave.
Yeah.
Would you respond to that? Would you challenge that? Or do you let it?
It depends on the team dynamics. Like, it's so funny because recently I joined the team and I'm reading some of, because you can, there's a whole history of like things that you've contributed, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes I've been reading this new team's history. And it's so funny, if someone comments something quite particular, they'll be like, okay, I'll raise it in a different task. Versus like what I'm used to, which is, okay, I'll just sort that out now. Do you see what I mean? So it just depends on the team dynamic. I would sometimes say, look, does this really need to be done right now?
Yeah.
Like, is this a real priority? Especially if it's something that is quite urgent, I need for this to be finished by a set date, and we're nitpicking on things that aren't even that serious. But I do think there's a certain best practice that people need to adhere to. But sometimes when you're just nitpicking tiny things,
yeah,
it's actually just not that serious.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I feel within, it's interesting because I've done a few episodes, you know, over the course of this year, like with professionals from varying fields. And I think one of the things that often stands out is like the barriers and the scarcity of the number of you know, black professionals who are in certain fields, whether it's you know, senior leadership in education, whether it's the number of black psychologists in the UK and whatever else. And you know, I know we've touched on it a bit, and the number of black people in tech is, you know, is a small proportion if you consider the sort of wider context of the tech world. What barriers did you face sort of coming into the industry, and what barriers do you think still exist for like some of like the young people that are trying to like come up and pursue, you know, tech as a career option?
Yes. Okay. I love this question. I think when I applied, it was a very different time.
Mm.
2020 was when I decided to take it seriously because we had a pandemic and things were free and online. And so it made it a lot more accessible, right? So I was just finishing my degree in economics and accounting, and I decided that I needed to differentiate myself from the computer science students. And how best was I going to do that? So the first thing I had to do is, okay, I was applying for roles and they kept saying, oh, we don't understand why you're applying. Like, you don't have a computer science background. You don't have a strong technical background, which was all true.
Mm.
It was actually all true. That's what happens when you necessarily take that leap, but it's key to get that feedback so you know which areas to focus on, right? In 2020, I'm focusing on, okay, who are the people that are also going to be applying for these roles? Computer science students. I'm not going to say that I'm going to get a computer science degree. So what else can I do? And so the main barrier was, okay, first, not having that degree. So I decided that not only was I going to learn how to code, but I was also going to teach other women through Code First Girls, which was the organization that helped me to get comfortable with learning how to code in the first place, right?
Yeah.
And then sharing that journey online. So I was sharing that on LinkedIn. Secondly, a big barrier is having mentorship. Again, I was doing it during the pandemic, so no one had a life. So when I was messaging people saying, hey, like, can we pair program together, all these things, they were saying yes because they had nothing else to do, you know? So it was like, we were locked up, we were all confused. So I'd say, oh, are you around at 7 p.m. 9 p.m.? On the weekend, everyone was around because no one was going out.
Yeah.
So it's a different thing now. And also, we didn't have AI then. So if I was like learning how to code to break into tech now, it'd be very interesting the role that ChatGPT and other AI powered tools would be helping me to up my coding skills.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would definitely say that there's an element of visibility that is a barrier. So if you don't have that visibility, so when I was applying for roles, and they'd see that, oh, she's active on LinkedIn, she's sharing about her journey, like she's teaching other people how to code, she must be serious. But there's also microaggressions that I faced in the interviews, you know?
Mm.
Like, I remember I had an interview. So there's an apprenticeship scheme that you can do for 18 months. So there's two types of apprenticeships. There's one that basically qualifies as a degree, and you do that over a 3-year period. So you're working full time and you're doing a part, like not necessarily a part-time degree, but you're doing something that contributes to you getting a degree. So you have work experience and a degree. And the second type is an 18-month scheme where you're working full time and you're still contributing. Like it's almost like a coursework, but you won't really get a degree equivalent, but it's maybe like a level 5 qualification in terms of an apprenticeship scheme. So I was applying for a role that was basically an apprenticeship, right?
Hmm.
So it meant that the people that were applying for that role did not have a technical background. And that was the whole point. So if you did have a computer science degree, you weren't eligible to apply for this role.
Yeah.
And so I'm saying about, I'm teaching other women how to code and building these coding projects. Like I've got a blog and all these things and how I organize my time in terms of like learning how to code and all these things. And then he's like to me, oh, that's interesting. Why have you ever thought about being a project manager?
Mm.
And I'm like, are you listening?
Yeah.
I know I'm organized, but I don't want to be a project manager. I'm literally telling you how I'm doing all these things, learning how to code, and now you're talking about me being a project manager.
Yeah.
And that was so disheartening because it made me feel like, do people not see what I'm saying? Like I'm really trying it. I'm doing the most. I'm putting myself out there only for people to be like, we still don't understand why you want to be a software engineer. And that was very, very frustrating. And even it was amazing to get the help of other people from different technical disciplines and different stages of their journey to help me understand my gaps. And when you go into interviews and you can't answer questions, so like there have been times in interviews where they'll ask me a technical question and I do not know the answer.
Mm.
And so I had to be like, I actually don't know the answer to this, but it's something that I'm going to learn eventually. So I'd have to I'd have to answer it in a way that I may not know this, but it's a fact that I don't know it yet, but I'm very, very willing to learn rather than saying, I don't know this.
Yeah.
Let's move on, you know? But I always bring a bit of flair into interviews.
No, you have to, man. Give him a little
pizzazz. A little razzle-dazzle, you know? And so, like, I remember even in an interview, I knew he was going to ask you this question, so I was preparing for a very specific technical question, and I said, this is what I know about it.
What was the question? Do you remember it?
Yeah, I do.
What was it?
It was like, it's in context of being a front-end engineer, right?
Yeah.
It was something like, how does React work? Or it was something on why do developers use React, right? Which is just a JavaScript library. Yeah. Oh, sorry, JavaScript framework. And I just remember, I just knew he was going to ask me this question. So I did a lot of research on it, but like, I'm nervous. So I say, this is what I know about it. And I just said everything I know, but don't ask me any more questions because that's all I know.
Wow.
And we're just laughing about it because it's funny, but I'm also being serious.
Like, but you know about it now though, you could answer
I can answer it now. Yeah. But like at the time I was just like, look, I don't know the context why, but I know that we do it, you know?
Yeah.
Or like I said, like, I just basically gave a breakdown of how I understood that worked. But if he picked apart the answer, then I would have been like, look, let's level with each other.
Yeah. that's important. Thank you for sharing that. And I wanted to ask as well, you know, you spoke earlier about, you know, not necessarily... you know, seeing yourself in like the tech leaders, not just in terms of like representation of ethnicity, but of gender as well. And like one thing that I recall just before because I used to be a head of year before, and I remember we would get emails from like organizations and like universities and whatever, you know, really trying to push like STEM within like black ethnic, you know,
interesting.
Like minorities. But that was like the latter part of, you know, my 5 years at the school, maybe like year four, year five. Could have been after COVID actually. Yeah, we've seen a lot after COVID.
Isn't it?
Not before COVID.
Yeah, there was something that shifted after COVID when it came to
STEM. Yeah, definitely something shifted. So that's, you mentioning you starting your journey at 2020 is actually given that light bulb. So it was definitely after COVID. So my question essentially is like, how important is it, especially for black girls, to see themselves like in STEM?
It's vital. Yeah. It's absolutely, especially at a young age, right? Because you're basically picking your interests and where you want to progress eventually in your career. Again, I've pivoted, so I feel like there isn't that much pressure, but it's always so powerful to see people who look like you succeeding. And I remember I didn't necessarily have that until I got LinkedIn. And I was like, oh my gosh, there are so many black people doing so well in professional careers, like, that I just didn't have access to in my day to day. And that's why it's just so powerful for them to see it. And even for me to see it when I was entering, the CTO of Compare the Market, Renee Hunt, is a powerhouse. She is an amazing woman. She's a black woman. And she gives back to the community so often. And I see the way that she pours back into the community. And I remember thinking, this is a woman that I aspire to be more like. And I'm so inspired by the way that she speaks. And I'm so inspired by the fact that she's a CTO taking up space. She's so smart. She's hyper intelligent. She's super charismatic, so good with people, a great emotional intelligence. And that's the kind of role model that we should be seeing more of. And the fact that she's so active in the communities is so... I just think it's inspiring to see someone that successful still giving back and still seeing that as absolutely vital.
Yeah. No, that's amazing. Thank you. And for yourself, like, because you're actually in tech, like, how have you sort of learned to navigate spaces where you're the only one, like, where you're
still
the only one? Like,
I'm still working out.
You're still figuring it out.
Because again, it's different depending on what company you work in. So sometimes you can work in a remote company, hybrid company, or you're in full time, and you're going to get different experiences in both. Or even if you're working in a startup, which is relatively more intimate versus like a mid-size versus a huge company, it depends on your team, your team dynamics. I've actually always been pretty fortunate to have a pretty diverse team, whether that's in gender, whether that's in race, like, and that's been very interesting to see how those team dynamics have played out. But sometimes I'm not always the only, which is powerful, but then I'll go into the office sometimes and I'm like, I'm literally the only black woman on this floor.
And do you think that's ever gonna change? Like, is, like, from what you're seeing, are there things being sort of put in place to encourage, like, more, like, diversity, inclusion and whatever else, like, throughout the different levels, not just like entry
exactly,
level,
right?
But throughout the different levels, because everyone says it. Oh, you know what? When I started, like, it was cool, but then the higher you go up, it's like you're the only person.
Yeah.
So it's like
it's a hard one to predict because of the whole narrative around DEI must DIE, if you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a hard one to predict about if they're going to be rolling back certain things, so that it. So there's like loads of programs that black people, women, like underrepresented communities can use to get into tech. And it'll be interesting what happens to those programs. We're already seeing defunding of some of these programs and the impact that's going to have to encourage underrepresented groups to step in is that if tech becomes a hostile environment, they won't want to come in. That's the reality. And we just don't know how the culture or the environment is going to play out.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. That's insightful. And I wanted, so anyone that I know who works in tech or any conversations that anyone that I have, you know, with like my friendship groups around tech, you just think money. You just think, oh, damn, like these guys are getting paid. Like, you've seen their offices, like they get, you know, I remember I went to Snapchat.
Oh.
HQ. And you know, like, you're leaving, you know, you're leaving angry because you've had such a good time and you know you've got to go back to your normal job.
Wait, what were you doing at Snapchat?
I was doing a program for, like, some young people that we work
nice.
With. So, they go there, they do, like, some like, coding stuff and, like, blah,
was
blah,
it
blah.
With, like, XRNA or?
Is that a program or is that people? I don't even...
Okay. Yeah, this is good. Yeah.
So it was with so we do that like once a year. So we've done that like the last 2-3 years. We just take a group of people there, and yeah, just an amazing opportunity. But last year was the first time I went. I don't usually go. Like some of my colleagues go, and I just thought, oh, this place is amazing. Like the office just amazing. The food's amazing. Even when we were leaving, like someone was saying to me, I overheard like some Snapchat colleagues talking, are you staying around like for the evening? Oh, it's blah, blah, blah on the menu. And I was like, I just asked, what do you mean? Oh, like we, like they incentivize people, like whoever wants to stay, and there's like evening meals, like that the chef or whoever cooks. I'm like, this place is crazy. crazy. And this is Snapchat. And their office is fairly new there. So imagine like these Googles and Instagrams. And anyways, I digress. I think what I wanted to ask is basically like the opportunities that there are in tech. Do you see it as like opportunities, especially within our community, for there to be like doors that opens like generational wealth for our community, where like if you hit the bag with this tech thing and you pass it on to the next, but like you guys are just, yeah, like is there opportunity for that? Or
no, I definitely think so. I think that it's not just in tech, it's in any high in demand valuable skill. So sometimes we can't focus on one set industry, but what are the set skills that are needed to make sure that we're future proof and that we're in a good position to monetize on those skills? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's why it's hard. Again, it can be challenging for me to answer these things because I'm not sure the role of AI and the impact on the need for certain levels of tech skills now. And that will be interesting to see how that shifts and to keep up with it. I actually was at an event at Google and they were talking about the most high in demand skills and how that's shifted from 10 years ago to till now. And it's just important to keep up with what are the tech trends or the trends that you see in terms of skill development, what new things are popping up and what is just a trend. Like, do you remember Web3 was a thing that was, it came and it's like, and then it's gone. Mm. And then cryptocurrency was a big thing. It came, it's gone. And it's come back recently as well. Yeah. And so what is something that is just a trend and what is long lasting that we can see that AI is something that's here now. In 5-10 years, will this still be here? And if it is here in 10 years, what skills do I need to maximize now? So in 10 years, I'm in a better financial position to provide that generational wealth as well. Because you're building up wealth, right? Unlike the Americans who get 100K after graduating, I will say that I'm not on 100K. And I love that growth mindset. I'm not on 100K yet. And when you graduate, you're not expected to be on 100K in the UK. So it's not like you get your first entry level role and you're rolling in the money.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the UK, you definitely do work.
You got a hustle.
And it just depends on what opportunity you get. Because I know some grads get paid so much money. Especially at the top companies. Like, I know Goldman Sachs pays so much money. I'm sure Google pay loads of money. Snapchat, I assume so too. Some of these scaling startups like Monzo, come on. They've got money. Yeah. So, yeah.
No, that's so interesting. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for sharing. And I know, so earlier you spoke a bit about the pivot. And I know there's going to be people sort of listening that you know, are thinking about a career change, because it's normal, you know, you have one career, you think, oh, you know what, this ain't for me, I want to try something new, or I want to get into something new, or I've always had like this interest or this idea. If there's anyone who's, you know, any professional who's in that space and they're thinking about a career change and they're thinking about maybe getting into tech and they're feeling like, oh, you know what, maybe it's too late, maybe that train sailed, like, what advice would you have for them?
Okay, so if you're looking to make a career change into tech, I would advise to follow 3 steps.
Mm.
So the first step is to understand where in tech are you looking to go to and what key skills you that align to that role. So when you think of tech, what kind of roles do you think of when you think of tech?
I don't think of roles. I just think of
like
companies.
It's like an umbrella term, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's like we need to niche down, like, okay, tech isn't something you can apply to. Like, what set roles are you going to apply to and what key skills do they need in those roles and how does that apply to the role that you're doing now? Because I was studying economics and accounting, so I'm changing to software engineering. There are some things that definitely do overlap. I'm having to overcompensate to bridge that gap further, right?
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. Second thing is building on those skills. So now that you've found the role, what key skills you need to do, now we build on those skills. So is that through, maybe you want to go through a degree route, you want to do an apprenticeship, you want to do some self-teaching, you want to go on a course. There are loads of courses available and there are so many resources now on YouTube, on Udemy, on all these like e-learning platforms. also there's AI powered tools. I'm actually so curious about how people are using AI for career changing. Well, that can be someone's next business. Steal it. It's not a bit of me. So definitely steal that. And then the third thing is obviously about applying. That was the most humbling thing that I've done. Because when it came to applying for finance roles, they're not saying, have a list of accounts that you've balanced and show me your portfolio. So when it came to technology, they were like, you need to have already known this. And so I'm thinking, oh goodness, you have to prove yourself. And it's not just for me, it's for everyone. You have to prove yourself before you land that role. Whereas for finance, they kind of accept that you don't really have any like finance experience. You're actually expected to go in, not blind per se, but they kind of appreciate that it's a hard skill to experience, but if you're not in the role. And so it's about understanding what are the technical assessments that you need to do and how best to prepare. And there's loads of like YouTube. Like I think YouTube is such a powerful resource because it's free. And people love nerding out over these things. So I'd watch people do interviews on YouTube and where they're practicing what it's like to be like to do a certain role, like a front end engineer role, or all these things. So definitely applying, experiencing yourself, and writing down all the questions. So when I would have knowledge gaps, I remember someone asked me about Git processes. And I just thought that this whole concept of Git and using the terminal and version control, I thought that they just made it up. I don't know why. So I just felt like this was a fake thing that they just got us to do just to fill out some time. Yeah. So when I was asked it in the interview, it helped me to realise that, oh, version control and Git is a real thing. And this is something I actually need to learn. So those are the top three things I'd say in terms of career changing.
No, thank you. That's so insightful. Thank you for sharing. I wanted to ask as well, for those who are already in tech, what are some of like the practical ways that those who are already in tech can sort of give back and, you know, invest in their communities? Because what I think one of the things that, you know, I'm always conscious of, and I've been able to see, especially through LinkedIn as well, like there are so many people doing like, you know, amazing things, and not only within their workplaces but outside of it, you know, entrepreneurial stuff. And you know, even one of the reasons I created this platform was, you know, to be able to like give back to our community in terms of knowledge, in terms of, you know, conversations, in terms of like stimulating the mind, hence, you know, the types of you know, conversations and the content you know, we have. So one of the things that I was, you know, I'll be keen to know, just in case there are people in tech that are thinking, you know what, I don't want this to just be like a 9-to-5 for me, and I want to give back. Like, what are some of the opportunities or things that they can do to sort of give back?
Yeah, so people working in tech or STEM, I would say that for them to give back, there's always two ways that you can do this. You can do it internally, so through your company. They normally have company initiatives where they're giving back, or they're going to conferences where you can speak at. So for example, Black Tech Fest is a great way to give back to the community. You're sharing your insights. It's a source for inspiration that Black technologists will go there to see people who look like them talking about key tech trends or anything of interest when it comes to landing careers, even pivoting within tech, which is interesting. And also externally. So what initiatives exist that you can actually volunteer at? So I just got an email recently for STEMets, which is for like young women in STEM. Mm. And I saw that there was an opportunity to volunteer for them. And I was like, okay, let me sign up as a volunteer because I actually do want to keep giving back. And so keeping an eye out for any opportunities to volunteer where these community initiatives exist. But it can be hard for them to seek this out because what do you type in? Sometimes like it's not available on Google searching, but you may see it on social media or things like that. But I think that if you really want to give back, then you'll come across these kind of initiatives that exist. Yeah. And then you either offer to volunteer or you apply to volunteer if they have that program set up already.
Yeah, that's amazing. And speaking about giving back, She Bites Back.
She Bites Back.
Tell me more about, you know, this baby, this project of yours. You know, how did it come about? Like, what did you want to, you know, achieve? And what do you do? Like, you know, in She Bites Back, like, what does it do?
Thank you for asking. So She Bites Back is a community. And it actually started because once I landed into tech, no one had warned me about the intense imposter syndrome that would arise, that feeling of being the only one. And it was just quite isolating, quite frankly, because I came from being involved in loads of women initiatives, like Coding Black Females, Code First Girls, and I was actually just used to just being like the vibes. And then so I went from that to being in the corporate world, and I just felt like this is just not the same, and something had to be done. And when I came across the statistic that 50% of women leave the tech industry by the age of 35, I know, I was like, something has to be done here. Mm. So it initially started off as a newsletter. So I was just writing newsletters about imposter syndrome, or like, and like the types that, and how it can manifest in our own lives. Specifically about, and one thing, one of the posts that did really well was talking about how much we can overwork. And that's why it was interesting for you to mention the pressure of working twice as hard, because that imposter syndrome, along with that feeling of being only and barriers that actually already exist, that can lead us to overworking and experiencing burnout, and the role that that played in like our professional lives. And now we've worked with likes of Depop, we worked with BrainStation, and to host events for women in tech, just all about building confidence, being brave, and essentially building up new connections so we can actually truly thrive in this industry. So hopefully correct that statistic of 50% leaving by the age of 35.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. That's amazing. Thank you for sharing. And obviously you're in tech. You know a lot about, you know, the industry. Like you hear things and see things, and you know, behind closed doors, or you know, in your newsletters and whatever else. What excites you the most about where tech is heading, and what scares you the most? Because, like, I'm thinking about AI, for example.
I know, that's the first thing as well. That's the first thing.
But when it came out, like, ChatGPT, I was like, oh, ChatGPT, man, I don't want to eat. But then used it for one or two things, and I was just like, oh, okay, it's not that bad. But then I've also watched iRobot.
So I've also watched
iRobot. I don't know, you know, I don't
that
know.
That is such a funny thing.
Yeah, I don't know where we're heading with this. So, yeah, what excites you and what scares you the most about where the industry's heading?
Can my answer be both AI? So AI excites me because it means that you're able to be more productive in less amount of time. And it means that you can delegate tasks that you previously could not delegate. For example, I don't care for writing documentation. And so I'll write notes and say, AI, just produce me this documentation. And I obviously will edit it. I will edit it. And so it means that you can delegate tasks that you really didn't want to do. And it saves you time so you can focus on things that you actually want to do. But at the same time, it does scare me because I think that... So Black Mirror is a great way of highlighting the unintended negative consequences that technology can have, even though we may have good intentions. So
a particular season...
You've been giving ChatGPT too much information. And what if there's a hacker that like gets in ChatGPT and can leak certain things about us?
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Because what kind of things are people putting in ChatGPT? Their address? Maybe their bank details? I'm not sure, but personal identifiable information. You just never know what's gonna amount from that. But then I can actually change my answer. That what scares me are cybersecurity threats.
That scares me.
Because like especially with deep fakes and like us being able to mimic certain voices. This is one thing that, call me a crazy person, but one thing I've been thinking about recently is, you know when people call you and you say hello, and then they just hang up. I was thinking recently, imagine if that they recorded your voice, just your hello, and somehow due to the advancement of technology, they're able now to get your tone. And then if they had access to, depending on how advanced of a hacker they are, they know that you're definitely connected to one person. They can use your voice to say, hey, like I'm in this situation, and all these things. Like, can you imagine? But that's where technology could potentially go, especially when people are sharing their voice and content all the time online.
Yeah.
It's like, what can we use this audio for?
It's like that you know, I could be having conversations with people. And I'm just like, oh yeah, you see that new Wingstop got that new flavor. Da, da, da. As soon as you go on TikTok, oh, 10 Wingstop videos have just been, you know, so.
And us not able to be to decipher misinformation or like AI generated videos, that's going to be scary because it's just getting better and better and better. And I feel like we go on social media to relax. No, we don't go on social media to be on and working out what's real, what's fake. So go to the comments and we'll try to work out with the comments, oh, is this like a legit video or not? And when the comments are split, people saying it's real, people saying it's fake, it's actually very hard to know anymore what's real and what's fake. And that's exhausting. And especially if you don't want to go for the effort, you may just believe everything that you see.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's interesting, definitely.
No, but
so if you could give yourself, your younger self, one piece of advice before entering tech.
Okay. Okay. I would say to her to embrace her personality, to be proactive, and to never lose that sense of excitement when it comes to researching things, learning things, and remembering that what she loves is to learn and to hone in on what does she actually want to learn about, basically. Mm. And I feel like she used to put a lot of pressure on herself, like, to get things right. And I would tell her that perfect decisions only exist in hindsight. And so you can't mitigate feeling negative emotions or having negative experiences, and that things will bad things may happen, but she will bounce back stronger and she will feel better towards it. She'll feel better afterwards, but she will hate the process of when things suck or when rejections happen. And I would tell her not to internalize that because it happens to everyone.
Yeah. So do you feel that you didn't embrace your personality when you first started?
I felt like I had to fit a mold.
The nerdy mold that you thought tech
like,
was.
Yeah.
Like the Big Bang Theory type.
That's quite extreme. Okay. But I see where that comes from.
Yeah.
No, but I just felt like I'm very bubbly. I'm like excitable. I chat a lot.
That's
like,
interesting.
Do you know what I mean? And so I felt like when I looked at Taka in these interviews, they were not... I would bring you like a little season of spice and everything nice, but like they weren't giving that to me all the time. Yeah, you know, so I felt like I had to dull it down a bit. And
but
like,
now it's fully embraced.
I would just say, well, to an extent, yeah. Obviously, I read the room. Like, I can't always bring my full self to every single scenario.
Yeah.
But I would say at least 80% I am me, you know? Yeah. And it's okay to be different.
Yeah. That's important, man. I think people don't sort of acknowledge the importance of being like your authentic self, like within the workplace, because it's positive for your well-being as well. You don't want to go there like having to be, you know, closed off and whatever else, and then,
it's exhausting.
Yeah, it's exhausting because you're putting on a facade, you know.
Yeah, but I see the way that some of my black colleagues feel exhausted because they are putting on a facade. Because they have to. That's the thing. They have to. Like, in their team environment, they're getting microaggressions, or, like, if they are behaving in a certain way, not like that, but, like, if they're bringing themselves and it's negatively perceived, they feel the need to mask and pretend that they're not one thing and bring a completely different person to work. But if you're doing this 40 hours in a week, you're spending the majority of your days being someone else, that is exhausting.
Yeah. And speaking about like the exhaustion and, you know, and being overwhelmed, etc., like what would you advise like people do in terms of like their mental health and well-being and keeping themselves in check in an industry that, yes, you know, we talk about how nice the offices are and how much you're getting paid, but the stresses and the expectations must be like overwhelming. Like, what can people do, whether you're entry level, senior or whatever, like well-being's well-being. Like, what would you recommend?
I love that. Like, what you can do for your mental health, basically, when things get overwhelming and tough, I would say first thing is to be around people that you actually like. So make sure that you're nurturing your friendships, your communities and things like that, because that should actually give you more energy, and being around people that you can be your full self in front of, because that will help you to recognise that oh my goodness, this feels good to be myself and to be accepted in this environment. I'd say secondly, don't neglect mindful practices. I know that like breath work and like mindful and meditation things can sound very woo-woo, but it makes a massive difference. Like you literally breathe to live. You know, of course. And so it's like this breath work and practice is actually so helpful in terms of grounding you and connecting you. But I think my personal number one thing is stepping out into nature. I love nature. Everyone that knows me knows I love going to the park and feeding the ducks. Always have. My mum has always taken me to feed the ducks. I don't feed them bread. Just saying.
Give
them that premium duck food. Come on.
What's premium duck food?
I get that at the pet store, Pets at Home. Yeah. You get duck food at Pets at Home. I get it on Amazon. I get these big buckets to feed the ducks. Come feed the bread.
Why can't you feed constipation?
It's not good for them. It's not good for them. You feed them bread in it.
I ain't fed ducks in, but I used to.
Isn't it? I used to.
But now
we know better.
Now I know.
And now we can do it better.
Yeah, premium
duck food. It doesn't have to be premium. It could just be the duck food.
No, you said premium, so it's got to be premium.
We've got to feed them ducks right. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
But stepping out into nature can be so helpful because I personally, for me, if I'm in a room and it feels like my whole feelings, my whole exhaustion can take up this whole space, but in nature, that's impossible.
Mm.
It's such a big, big environment. And you just realise that your problems aren't as big as they may feel when you're indoors versus outdoors.
No, that's insightful. Thank you. And just to finish off, I want to know, like, what's the legacy that you want to leave behind?
Oh, that's such a tough question.
Like, what's the legacy that you want to leave behind, you know, when they're doing your Amazon or Netflix documentary? And it's like, you know, the last episode of the three-part episode. And it's that, you know, that ending bit just before the subtitles.
I love that. Like,
what's the legacy you want to leave behind?
That's such a hard one. There's so many ways I could go through this. I think that maybe the one thing is about embracing that you won't always be fearless. You can't be. Mm. But you just need to be brave. And so that's how you need to tackle every situation. That just having that bravery to feel that fear and do it anyway is going to be the most powerful thing that you can do.
Damn, that was... You won't always be fearless, but you'll always be brave.
Brave.
Yeah, I'm going to use that.
Take it.
I'm going to use that. Was that ChatGPT or was that...
That's
you?
Me. That's you. You just saw me here.
Oh, okay. That was proper. No, that's powerful. Thank you. Thank you for sharing. It's been... Yeah, it's been such a great and insightful...
I'm actually quite offended that you said the ChatGPT thing. Why could that not have just been me?
No, it could have been, but you know what?
I'm not programming right now.
See the problem with AI now? It's that any little thing people are just thinking, I need to reprogram myself.
I think you need to reprogram.
Yeah, I need to reprogram myself. But... yeah, no, thank you, Amber. That's been it's been an amazing episode. So insightful and so much to learn about, you know, like the tech industry and it's raised like a lot of curiosities for me as well because I'm someone that I like to learn even outside of my industry, which is, you know, education. So you've definitely given me a lot of food for thought, so thank you again. So that has been the Too Cool for School podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please follow us on our social media platforms and subscribe to our YouTube page. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.